Boker Tov, I think we can get started. Welcome, class 157. We just went through on the website to make sure, you know, the numbering, everything is ordered. So we got them all. If anybody wants to, you know, spend the next 3 months listening, we've got all 157 Shirim lists in order. There's some of the Machzor ones, some not the Machzor ones. Anyways, here we are, class 157, the official count at the close look at the Siddur. Hopefully today we'll finish at Samach David and get into Shema Kolenu, and then we'll actually be finished the middle section of the Shmon Esrei. I doubt we'll finish the Shema Kolenu today, but we'll see how that goes. Okay, so somebody emailed me at the end of class last week. They didn't want to ask me a question at 10:20. I said, it's okay, you can still ask questions then. But anyways, so I just want to spend a couple minutes. We were talking about how the Rambam says you shouldn't waste your time. I've mentioned a few times, but it's important. Don't waste your time worrying about when the Mashiach is going to come, because it doesn't bring us to Avat Hashem, to love of God, or to fear of God. In other words, the Rambam is basically saying the goal of the Torah is to have love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, whatever that means exactly. And speculating, this is the Mashiach, this guy had a dream, and Mashiach's coming this year, that year, don't waste your time, it's Narishkeit. And of course, we know how dangerous it is. I know people are listening, we're in the middle of a five-part series on their podcast of Jewish Ideas on Shabtai Tzvi. And he's just the most famous, and we know how dangerous and how terrible the repercussions are. So somebody asked, is that the true in the debate of Mikdash? So we mentioned last week the debate between Rashi and the Rambam. Does the Rambam get so excited about this? So the answer is yes and no. But then that was building the temple. So we said that Rashi is of the view, I think the view that's taught to people today, because we live in this type of a sort of this mystical world, that the third temple is going to come down from heaven. And okay, and the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says, Rambam's a great rationalist. Things don't come down from heaven. I mean, maybe manna bread in the desert, but that ended when we entered the land of Israel. Things don't fall from heaven, and so there no temple, no building falls from heaven. So I just wanted to say, so the Rambam says you shouldn't worry about that. How do you know it's going to come? So I don't know. I'll show you in a minute. We'll take a quick look. The Rambam connects the building of the Bein HaMikdash to the coming of the Mashiach. In other words, the Mashiach has three roles. The Mashiach, the Rambam writes, the Mashiach is going to conquer the land and destroy Amalek. The Jewish people have three mitzvot when they come to the land of Israel. They have to appoint a king. That's a very interesting question, by the way. Not for now, but just to allude to, because, I mean, we are praying. This is the bracha praying for kingship. So I guess we could talk about it now. Does a king mean a king? So that's another famous debate in Jewish theology and history and halakha and thought. Is a king a good thing or a bad thing? So the Rambam thinks it's a good thing. The Rambam thinks the king is a good thing. The Abarbanel, who worked with kings, so he knows better, I might say. So the Abarbanel, who was, of course, the finance minister in both Portugal and Spain, are very influential, very important, so much so that Ferdinand and Isabella offered him to stay in Spain. They said, you know, when it comes to money, you know, money doesn't smell, and we don't care if you're Jewish, he's going to help the Spanish government. So they offered the Abarbanel to stay. The only reason you ever heard of him is because he said no. Had the Abarbanel said yes, he'll stay, believe me, you would have never heard of him, and nobody would read his books, just like many other rabbis in Spain, because many, maybe the majority, I'm not sure of that, but many rabbis did convert. Some converted, they mamish converted, like beginning in 1391, they actually converted. They believed in Christianity. That was the dominant religion, Christianity. You know, God abandoned the Jewish people, chas v'shalom, and whatever. And then you had, of course, people who converted not meaning to, hoping to come back. And only they're really, it's tough. I don't judge anybody. I don't know what anybody would do here. We can't know. If somebody, God forbid, put a gun to her head and said convert or leave the country, it's not so clear what people would do, even great people. Anyway, so that's the Abarbanel was against kingship. And he says when the Torah allowed a king, like Yifat Tawar, the Torah allows a person in war to, I don't know, what you want to call it, rape, I don't know, that's not a nice term, but the Torah allows to basically take a captured woman and to marry her. You don't ask for her will. That clearly, and the rabbis say the Torah doesn't really like this. And I mentioned last week I'm reading Mark Shapiro's new book on Rav Kook. It's very, very, very fascinating. So one of the things he mentioned is the many rabbis say, sorry, this law doesn't apply anymore. You know, things in the Torah we've done away with, and this doesn't apply anymore. You can't have Yipat Torah even in modern war. So it's very interesting. So it's not exactly the same, but many of the commentaries say having a king is something negative. The Torah said, if, when you come down, you want to say, Kechol HaGoyim, I want to be like all the nations, Som Tasim Alech HaMelech. So appoint for you a king, and these are the laws of the king. And the Torah very much limited the laws. You can't have more than 18 wives. I know that sounds, you know, crazy, but in the, you know, ancient world, 18 wives for a king was nothing. And you can't have too much money. And of course, we know all the halachas to limit the king, because the Torah knows how corrupting power is. And before Lord Acton, the Torah knew that power corrupted. And that's why the king has to walk around with the Sefer Torah the whole day, carrying, has to write his own Sefer Torah, that he shouldn't be too power hungry. So the Torah itself, okay, it allowed it, but it doesn't think it's a great idea. So that's one argument. There's a second, I guess, related concept. What is the definition of a king? So Rav Kook was of the view, this I remember hearing in yeshiva years and years ago. I don't think Mark mentioned, unless he's going to come up later in the book, I'm almost finished, but Rav Kook mentions that a king doesn't necessarily mean a monarch, like a king, it means any person who the Jewish people have, who they've appointed over them. So he said, there wasn't quite that yet, but like the Israeli Knesset would have, it's a sort of a scary thing to say, but if you look who the kings were in Nach, it's not so scary. The kings in, most of our kings were evil. Just read the Bible, and just most of our kings were really bad. You had a few good ones. Chizkiyahu, Yoshiyahu, every 10th king was every 5th king was a good guy. Most of them were really bad. And they, you know, Yerubam, he split the Jewish people. He didn't allow people to go to Jerusalem. You know, they weren't giving billions of dollars to people studying in Yeshivot. So, but, a king means people who rule over the Jewish people. Doesn't necessarily have to be a monarch. In a democratic country, it could be the parliament that would be. So that's very interesting. That has halachic implications. Your attitude towards kingship or towards the governing authority, because the Jewish law is very strict. One who defies a king gets a death penalty, because you're undermining. It's like you're undermining the authority. It's kind of like a zakein mamre. We know a member of the Supreme Court who flaunts a ruling of the Supreme Court, in theory, gets a death penalty. If me or you flaunt it, okay, so we flaunt it. So the rabbis say X, and we don't do X. Okay, it's not the end of the world. But if you're a member of the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court votes 6-3, or in the Jewish Supreme Court, they vote 40-31. 40-30, that's not such an overwhelming majority, or they vote 36-35. For something, and you think they're wrong, and you're going to tell people the court is wrong, and I'm going to do what I do. So then the Torah says, in theory, you give that person a death penalty. Because when members of the Supreme Court don't respect their own court, you have anarchy. If you don't have a strong judicial system, you're finished, and therefore you have a death penalty. What I always like to quote, and it's very beautiful, is, we always believe in intellectual honesty. Always believe in intellectual honesty. So the member, the person who voted against the majority in the Supreme Court of a Sanhedrin, he's allowed to say, I think the Sanhedrin is wrong. He's actually allowed to write a editorial op-ed page in the New York Times or Mishpacha magazine. I don't know if you say Allah Habdil there or not. I'm not sure. But if you, I only read one. Let's put it that way, of the two. But anyway, you're allowed to say, I think the court is wrong, and here's why. But you have to say, but the bottom line is I have to follow the court. And that's such a beautiful idea, that you can express your dissent with the greatest of rabbis, with the high court. And I'm talking about, okay, that's a member of the Supreme Court, but fine, anybody, that this intellectual honesty applies to anybody. But you have to accept their authority, even if you don't like it. We don't tell you to agree with it just because they ruled it. Anyways, so that's another question. What is, you have one question, is having a king a good idea or not? So that's a debate. And then, of course, the real question, okay, we're going to have a Jewish state. That's what we're praying for. It's Samach David of the Chamei Ratasmiach. We should have Davidic monarchy. Does a Jewish state, the king, have to be a king? Maybe you can have, well, I guess that's really the same argument on a certain level. Or can you have a democracy? As it was Churchill. No, I'm not a political scientist. Maybe I should stop. But was it Churchill said democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others? Was that, am I quoting Churchill correctly? Or are the historians in the, I am quoting Churchill correctly. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Okay, so let's take a quick look how the Rambam goes through this. Just, I hope it's important, I think. And then we'll take a look at one of the censored Rambams. It's right here, which is actually quite amazing. Okay, so the Rambam writes, where are we here? Why is this going? Why is this? I don't know why I have something blocking my screen, but okay. So the Rambam here in chapter 11, this is the 999th chapter in the Mishnah Torah. We've quoted before how I think this is first noticed and only in the 19th century that there are 1,000 chapters in the Rambam. I can guarantee you that is not a coincidence. There are 1,000 chapters in the 14 books. The Rambam, the great organizer, among his other amazing talents, he was an unbelievable organizer and administrator. So he says, HaMelech HaMashiach Atid Lamod V'Lachzir Malchut Beit David Liyashna. So that's what we're praying for. I mentioned last week, this is a prayer at Tzemach David. It's a prayer for the Davidic dynasty and the Messianic kingdom. In other words, it's one and the same. The Messianic king will return the Davidic dynasty to its proper place, and he will build the Beit HaMikdash, and he will ingather the exiles, right? One of the signs of the Messianic era is the return of the Jewish people. That's why I assume most people who are here today believe that this is at least Atchalta de Gula, whatever. That's the fact that there are 7 million Jews living in the state of Israel is clearly redemptive. Doesn't mean the redemption is coming. We can blow it. But it has signs of potential redemption. And the Chozrim Kol HaMishpatim Hayu Mikodem, all the laws of the Torah can start being applied. Makrivim Korbanot. This is actually quite fascinating because the Rambam says we're going to bring sacrifices, even though I'm sure many people are aware that the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim had a very lukewarm at best attitude towards sacrifices, feeling they were just a response to the needs of the time. The Jews in the desert leaving Egypt, the whole world was sacrificing, but we don't really need it. But here in halachically, he said they will come back. The last chapter in Dr. Mark's book that I'm reading that I haven't read yet, but I know a little bit about Rav Kook and Korbanot. Rav Kook does suggest the possibility, he's not the only one, that in the Third Temple, there will not be animal sacrifices, even though it's whatever, but that's just an interesting idea. Okay, and we're not going to go through the whole thing. You have Shemitah and Yovel, etc. And whoever doesn't believe this, kol mi sheino mamin bo, or he doesn't wait. You don't sing, you know, v'yaf al pi shehit mamei ha'im kol ze achak elo b'chol yom sheyavo. You have to wait for the Mashiach to come. You have to, no, not just wait, you have to anticipate and be yearning for it. Not only is he denying all the Yishayah, the prophets, he's denying the Torah of Moshe. The Rambam takes this pretty seriously. That's what we say in the Tefillah for the state of Israel, that we should return imiyani lacham b'ksei ha-shamayim. If you're scattered throughout the world, everybody's going to come back. That's what we do. This is basically, you know, this is because we feel there's some connection, obviously, between the state of Israel today and the potential for the Messianic kingdom. Okay, so the Rambam goes through all this. So you say, so the Rambam is telling us how, so he's not exactly telling us how the king is going to happen. I mean, he just says this will be, this is what's going to be. It's going to be human kings. This is what he's going to do. But he doesn't really tell you how that's going to happen. He just says, yeah, just same way he tells you there will be a Mashiach. We don't know how it's going to happen. There will be a king, and this is the role of the king. But he's not really telling you, you know, are secular Zionists going to make that king come? Are they going to be the one? Or is it going to come, you know, through the United Nations? Like, that's a no, and we obviously don't know. And then the Rambam says something important that, again, this rationalistic Rambam, do not think that the Messiah has to make miracles. He has to otonu maftimu mechadesh tvarim. He's going to do nothing new. Or mechayeh hemetim. He doesn't resurrect the dead. Or this is not, no, ain't that our king. This is no way. It's not like this. And then, okay. And he talks about how Rabbi Akiva made the mistake of thinking that Bar Kochba was the Mashiach, and Kevan Shenerak Nodalhem Sheno, this is sort of in Christian polemics, right? The Rambam says once a potential Mashiach dies, then you know he's not the Mashiach by definition. If he's dead, he cannot be the Messianic king. So the Rambam says you can have a person who's Becheskat HaMashiach, somebody who brings the Jewish people. He's a religious Jew. He follows the Torah and he encourages people. He finds the Kiruv movement. He's the head of outreach, of Jewish outreach. And he wins the wars and, Israel is safe and secure. So he's Becheskat Mashiach. He has the potential, or we have an assumption he's the Mashiach. And then we're going to see what's going to happen. And then we'll find out later for years. I mean, we can spend more time, but I just want to give you sort of a flow of the Rambam. But I want to say this. I don't know how many people are aware of this. Let me know if you are. This, of course, used to be censored. What we're going to do now is, you can understand, this wasn't in the classical editions of the Rambam, but it's been put back, I hope, in most versions. So, Af Yeshu HaNotzri, even Jesus of Nazareth, Shadima Sheya Mashiach, he thought he would be the Mashiach, or they assumed he was Mashiach, but Nerag Bebeitin. So the Rambam claims that the Jews actually did kill Jesus. That's what the Rambam writes. I'm not getting into historical thing. I'm just reading the Rambam. Benerag v'beitin, the Jewish court killed Jesus. Kvar nitna be'Daniel, so Jesus was alluded to through the obscure, very hard to understand prophecies of Daniel. Okay. And, then the Rambam continue. Says, Machshava borei olam ein koch biyadam letzikam. We can't understand how God works. Don't tell me you know God's plan. Nobody has a pipeline to God. Kilo darcheinu drachav, kilo v'lo machshavotai machshavoteinu. That's what we say, the Haftar, we don't think alike. We're on different planets, literally. And all these things with Jesus and the Yishmaelite, Muhammad, this is an amazing Rambam. The purpose of Jesus and Muhammad from a Jewish point of view was to pave the way for the Jewish Messiah. They basically got the world talking second coming, Mashiach, they got the world all excited about the Messiah. So good, and then they have it wrong, but we'll get it right. Oh, but also, and they enhance the world, they fix the world, that everybody should worship one God. Basically, they're monotheistic. Without getting into the Roman view on Christianity, they're way up over paganism. There's a vote last night, Rabbi Kerbel talked about idolatry, right? And there's idolatry and there's idolatry. You know, it's not all the same. Paganism was much worse. So this was a step up. That's how the Rambam writes. And etc. And then the Rambam gets to the 12th chapter, and then says the Mashiach. See, the Rambam is the same thing. The Messiah is going to build the Beit HaMikdash, and the Mashiach is not going to change anything. This is what the Mashiach is going to do. The world will operate properly as it does now, and the prophecy that the lion or the lamb will the wolf will lie with the lamb. That's just allegory. It's not really true. Lions are going to eat lambs. If you go on a safari, the animals will still be killing each other. It's an allegory how the Jewish people are a mashal. Well, we will be able to dwell with the nations of the world in peace. That's the most important thing, peace. There's nothing more important than peace. And then it's only after the Rambam goes through this, there's no difference except for the world will be a democratic world. That's really what he's saying. Shibud Malchiyot. The only difference, there won't be subjugation. The nations, you won't have authoritarian rulers in the world. You'll have democratic rulers who respect other countries, who respect the people, human rights. And, you know, that's we're unfortunately far from that. That's the only thing. It's a big thing. That's all going to change. And then the Rambam says, when he adds on all these things, and I assume he's talking about the Mashiach, the Beit HaMikdash, all these things, we won't know until they actually happen. So building the Beit HaMikdash, Mashiach, coming of Mashiach, is all sort of one package deal, but we don't really know what's going to happen. And don't waste your time. That's what the Rambam says, as he said many times, Olam lo itasek adam, lo yarich b'meidra shor amarim, don't spend a lot of time with this, all these books that people write, you know, when the Mashiach is coming, lo yisimin ikar, they're not the main focus, in other words, they're not totally unimportant, but don't waste your time. They don't bring to fear of God or to love of God. Don't worry if this world's going to come to an end. Is this world going to last 6,000 years, like the Gemara said? We don't know any of these things. Just you have to have faith. And that it should be good, but we don't really know what's going to happen. Okay, that's, I don't know if anybody, kind of interesting, but that's how the Rambam, that's his, you know, view of how the Mashiach come up. Well, obviously not the only view, but I think it's one that I guess I like, you know, being the rationalist and whatever. But that's it. Mashiach, let's not waste our time. And the truth of the matter is, I'll say something maybe a little bit controversial, and you feel free to disagree with me. I talk, you can disagree with the Sanhedrin, Kal Vachomer, you don't need any permission to disagree and think I'm totally wrong. And you don't even have to listen with the Sanhedrin. You have to say, I think they're wrong, but I have to listen with me, Jake Hillman. I think Jake Hillman's wrong, and I'm going to not listen to him. Beautiful, beautiful. So, but I think we have the same, I think today we have the same problem with all the going up on the Temple Mount. There's this sort of fervor in the parts of the religious community in Israel that, you know, we can rebuild the temple now, and let's get rid of the mosque and all that. And I think that's very, very dangerous. And that's, I told a friend of mine who we disagree with very strongly, who goes up to the Har Habayit on Tisha B'Av, you know, likes to go on Tisha B'Av. I say, I don't go up for religious reasons and political reasons. I don't believe in going up to Har Habayit. But that's me, because I think this is, we're not there yet. I think the Jewish people are too divided. Don't worry. Have faith. If God wants the temple to happen, it will happen. But it's not going to happen because Jews go up on the temple and do pray and don't pray. It's going to happen because we're going to learn how to get along with one another. And we're going to learn how to respect all the differences. And the same way the false messiness we know is dangerous, I think false templehood is very dangerous. That's my personal opinion, and I hope you don't mind if I express it, and please feel free to tell me why you think I'm wrong, I guess, afterwards, at the end of this year. I will say, and I was thinking about this, so why can't I say the same thing on the State of Israel? So maybe it's wrong to declare a State of Israel. So I don't know. I don't get there. I don't know if people saw this week, one of the leaders of the Haredi world actually said we should no longer have a State of Israel. This is somebody who hundreds of thousands of people actually listened to him, that I don't know, it was in the newspapers, that Israel was much better when the Arabs ruled Israel. There was peace. I don't know what planet he's living on, but okay. There was peace when the Arabs ruled over Israel, and if Israel would just give up sovereignty and let the Arabs run Israel, we could live here in peace. No. Okay, but that's not a normal person talking. But you can argue, why not say that it was inappropriate to have the State of Israel? So the truth of the matter is, people did say that. I'm not talking about now. Taka people did say that. And I remember Rav Schachter telling us, you know, a long time ago, he says, you know, 100 years ago, you could have an argument. Is it proper to establish a State of Israel? That argument is over. As Rav Soloveitchik says often, God Puskins through history. God rules through history. He said that by Yosef and the brothers in his famous, his beautiful talk on the fight between Yosef and the brothers. He portrays it as a fight over ideology. That Yosef said the world was changing. He had dreams, different, you know, the sheaves of well, we're living in it. The economy is going to change. Everything's going to change. Technology is going to change. We can't do the same way that our parents and grandparents did. We're living in a different world. And the brothers said, the brothers were from, and then no, we just follow the path of our parents. That's how Salvation presents it. And of course, he's explaining why he left the Yagud and became a member of the Mizrahi. And he's saying, you know, World War II, the Holocaust, God Paskin, God ruled through history that things change. And you can be an anti-Zionist in 1897, but you can't be an anti-Zionist in 1945. And so history paskins, but you're right. There really was. I mean, we don't realize that there was most of the rabbinic, there was tremendous rabbinic opposition to Zionism. Not every rabbi, and a lot of the feeling was, Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, right? Let's take somebody modern who people look up to. Shimshon Raphael Hirsch was very, I mean, I know he died before 1897, but the religious Zionist movement started before Herzl. And he was opposed to it. We're going to wait for the Mashiach. We're not ready for it. And I could hear such an argument. It's not a crazy argument as you think. Yes, in 1945, it's an insane argument. And the world changed and they can't sue that. But anyways, where to draw the line? I don't know. These are difficult questions and maybe we should stay out of the politics. Let's get back to our sitter. But it is important. We do have to apply the principles into real life. That's everything we do. Not abstract. It's real. So, don't worry. It's bad. To false messianism is terrible. And the worrying about the temple to me, I think is, you know, not the smartest thing in the world and whatever. But okay, what can I tell you? In terms of a belief, I mean, the Chafetz Chaim, who was a Kohen, the Chafetz Chaim was a Yisrael Meir Kagan, so he believed in learning Kutchim. Okay, that's perhaps, I would say, a beautiful way to prepare. Let us learn the tractates that deal with the, the temple. But he meant, so we'll be ready. If maybe that'll help God be ready. Okay, now we'll get Kohanim to know what they're doing. And I don't know if it's connected because he's a Levi, you know, the Soloveitchiks, of course, are Levim. And Rav Soloveitchik and his youth learned only Kutchim. That's what he learned with his father. He didn't learn the classical Masechtot. And he learned Menachot, Zvachim, stuff that nobody ever opened up and nobody learned Daf Yomi. Until Daf Yomi, nobody ever learned this stuff. You know, now it's part of Daf Yomi, so you have to learn about Korbanos. But it was never studied in the classical. You had great rabbinim who never opened up a Masechet Menachot. Whatever, it was just never learned. And so the Chavetz Chaim, we have to learn it. We're coming back to Israel. I don't know, the redemption, whatever's happening. And so that's that was the way to prepare. But Rav Soloveitchik, when he first came to YU, when all his Yortzeit Shirim for his fathers originally were given on Kutchim, and he saw nobody was interested. He was smart. He was a good pedagogue. He was a good teacher. You know, if the students aren't interested, you teach something else. And he said, they're bored. Don't give me, who cares about, how the Yainessa, how the Nisuach HaYayin, and nobody cares about that stuff. So he started teaching the stuff that people like, Moed, you know, Purim, he gave great Tefillah, Brachot, you know, the interesting stuff that people find interesting. And anyways, okay. Any questions, comments before we move on? Anybody want to throw any eggs at me? And no. Okay. Nobody. I can't believe it. Okay. So let's finish up any of just last comments before we get to Shema Kolenu. So, Et Samach David Elchamei Ratatz Miach. So we mentioned last week, of course, that Vil Yerushalayim Ircha and Et Samach David used to be one bracha. It's such a fascinating idea, but it's so clear when you see it. And so that was the custom in the land of Israel. It was one bracha, and that's why we have the line in the bracha of Bili Yerushalayim, V'chisei David Meirela Tochat Achin, and established the chair of David that doesn't belong in the for Jerusalem. But when it's one bracha, of course it belongs, because we repeat that same thing at Samach that we discussed last week, and then why Rav Soloveitchik explains in Babel it got divided into two, because we had to separate. It was very different, the life in Chutzarot and the fears were different, that they wouldn't survive, and that's a prayer to survive in the exile. But I just thought, sort of, you know, if I want to go back to this, how God puskins, you know, sometimes God through history, it's very dangerous. We don't really get, we're not prophets to fully interpret, but we can learn lessons from history. The fact, we have to learn lessons from history. The fact that these are two blessings now, they're two separate blessings, to me means that you can have one without the other. In other words, there were two oppositions to Zionism and the state of Israel. The one was basically fundamental, that it's wrong to have a state of Israel before the coming of the Mashiach. So that was the dominant view of traditional Jews in the 19th century. And the Holocaust changed all of that. Only Satmar pretty much maintains that view, but Satmar's maintaining the classical view. They didn't do anything new. That was the view of even the good. That was the view of most or many of the leading rabbis, that based on the Gemara in Ketuvot, that the three oaths that I'm sure many of you have heard of, that when we went into exile, it's the Gemara in Ktuvah, I don't have it here, we're not going to look at it inside, that God made the Jewish people swear three oaths, and one of them, or three of them, I guess all three of them, one is we will not go up to Israel by force, we will not, one is, I forget now, two of them relate to going to Israel, we will not go up like a wall by force.
Lo
we will
not,
right, lo yabechomot, what's the other, and the nations won't subjugate us.
We won't, right? We won't.
Right, but I forget the third one. It's also connected to going to Israel. So that's this is classic Satmar ideology, and this is. But of course, this is an agadic statement that is not quoted in any halachic source. But that was the view of Jews. We wait for the Mashiach. It's based on that idea. It's based on a verse in Shir Hashirim. We're going to wait. And that all changed in the 19th century. Rav Yehuda Alkalai, Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was a top student of Rabbi Akiva Eger. These were great, great rabbis who said times are different. Nationalism, it's a weird, different world, like Yosef. And we have to create Zionism. There was a lot of opposition because it's just wrong. Zionism is forbidden until the Mashiach comes. But like I say, that view was basically done away with the exception of Satmar, and now apparently some other leaders in the Haredi community holding that view. The other opposition to Zionism was a practical Zionism, a bunch of heretics. How in the world can heretics be the one who are going to lead us to salvation? This is ridiculous. We didn't pray for people who eat treifas and Mechal Shabbos. We prayed for a religious state. So that's where the Rambam, you're taking the Rambam, we don't know how it's going to be, And I don't have anybody who grew up, I don't know, in religious Zionist schools, like, I went to Nehekia, I went to Camp Mosheva, obviously they weren't so successful because I'm still living outside of Israel, but okay. You learned all the stuff where Rav Kook, of course, Rav Kook had the beautiful, they're doing wonderful work, and who knows, it's not for us to judge. And sometimes God will bring about salvation through other people. And Rav Kook, of course, saw they understood better than all the rabbis, the secular Zionists, the need to recreate so that's a practical thing. In other words, if the state would be a religious state, then we can be all in support of it. Okay, so that's whatever. That's, I would say, the more dominant view of sort of the anti-Zionist world of today. No, nobody, anyways, okay, so that's what that's what we're praying here for, but we don't know it yet, but so we have one without the other. So that's my point. The bracha got split. So perhaps this is a sign, if I can say such a thing, that we can have v'Yerushalayim Ircha and at Tzemach Levi, two separate things. V'Yerushalayim Ircha, build up Yerushalayim. That's how Yerushalayim, Baruch Hashem, 800,000 Jews today in Jerusalem. I do say Nachem. I just don't say the classical version because I can't say that. That's a lie. How can you say a Ircha Reva, Habizuya, we didn't do that. We'll come back to that maybe before Tishba. We skipped Nachem, but we know on Tishba we ask God to give comfort. And we say that it's here. I can maybe go to Mincha here. So I assume it's printed in Mincha. I don't know. And the regular Mincha, where is it here? Shachrit. So it says, Ha'ir, what does it say? Yeah. Nachem here. Avaleit Zion He'ir Avela. Okay, a city in mourning. That can unfortunately be true. Achariva, destroyed. Abizuya, I don't know. How do you translate bizuya? It's a neglect. It's a yaki. How do they translate? Destroyed, scorned. Shomema, desolate. How can somebody say it's desolate? Ha'avela mivni baneha. It's mourning because no Jewish people live there. Its children don't live there. That's just a lie. V'chariva mimonoteha. And its buildings are destroyed. Just isn't true. And it's lost its scorn because of from its honor. Hashomimame ein yoshev. It's desolate because nobody sits there. It's foxes, shoalim hochimbo, right? The pasuk in Eicha. Foxes go there. So this is a total lie. Now, well, just to defend the other, Rav Soloveitchik didn't change it. Okay, so who am I? So Rav Soloveitchik said, it doesn't, you can't interpret it literally. It means figuratively. Without the temple, it's considered destroyed. But even his son-in-law, his great son-in-law, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, couldn't accept that. And where's Rav Aaron living in Israel? So there are many attempts made to change Nachem. So say Shir Shai Tabezuya, you can say Nachem, it's not the way we want it, 100%. But you have to acknowledge the great that it was. I mentioned last week all the time, the Gemara says that God wanted to make Chizkiyahu, one of our great kings, the Melech HaMashiach, but he didn't say thank you. He'd low on Marshira. He didn't sing this Hallel because God saved him in the war in Sancheirib. So you have to appreciate. And I think, I imagine, I don't know if anybody, the weeks are getting a little later, so pretty soon people from Israel will be able to come to the class. That's the one disadvantage of a Friday morning class, but I want to have Torah every day, so whatever. I took on the role a few years ago of giving the Friday morning class. So, but I don't know in Israel if anybody says it in the religious Zionist community. I imagine in the Haredi community, nobody changes the words. But Marcel Beishit didn't change the words. In that sense, he was mostly conservative. But it's, but my point is, you can have Yerushalayim built up and beautiful, even if it's not at Tzemach David Avlecha, even though we don't have the Messianic Kingdom. When it was one bracha, this is my sort of, homiletic interpretation. When it was one blessing, so the point of Yerushalayim was to have a Davidic Kingdom. The Messianic is going to be perfect. And, it didn't work out that way. We have people in Yerushalayim, it's not what we would, it's amazing. I think people lose, and the amount of, the... How many people are Shomer Shabbos? Listen, it's unbelievable. The bottom line is Israel saved 5 million Jews from assimilation, right? Had most of their ancestors come. The ancestors, the 2 million Jews who came to America between 1881 and 1924. So how many of their great-grandchildren are Jewish? I don't know. You need a sociologist to tell you. Most aren't. Well, when you have today a 71% intermarriage rate, most people in America assimilate. The fact that the Orthodox community is now, I don't know, used to be 5% of the community when I was a kid. Maybe today it's 25%. Maybe in New York City, over 50% of kids under 18 are Orthodox. That's not something to be happy about. That's something to be sad about. It's because what it means is the conservative reformer dying. That's a terrible thing. They're part of the Jewish people. So in Israel, they had nowhere to go. I mean, you have an odd one here and there, married an Arab, but bottom line is they remain Jewish and they're culturally Jewish. They may eat on Yom Kippur, although most don't. There's some 90% Jews in Israel, but they may eat chametz on Pesach again. Most don't, but okay, they eat treif and they drive their cars on Shabbos, but they're totally culturally Jewish. And of course, they risk their life for the Jewish people. That's more than I can say. So they're greater than I am. I'm not here. I don't. So I'm saying we can have the Yerushalayim Ircha Barachamim Tashuv. But even without Et Samach David, we've now separated two brachot. Okay, that's how I understand it. But anyway, so that, but we are praying for the return of a properly run Jewish state. I know it's very political. You can't say, you want the state to run al pi halacha. I think every religious Jew, I mean, I would never say that in public. And I think, because it's because we have done a very poor job of explaining what it means to run a halachic state. But obviously the prayer of all religious Jews is the state of Israel should be run according to halacha. But the question of whose interpretation of halacha, is, yeah, the halacha that you're nice to immigrants and we don't have any racism and we treat the poor, that halacha, and the halacha that we can't force people to do anything. That's what many people said in today's era. No religious legislation. You can't tell people what to do. We don't, that was 2000 years ago. That's also Rav Kook and many others say. We don't want kviyat datit. And many, many great Talmidei Chachamim say that. It's not, anyway, so that, yeah, halachic state like that would be beautiful. The halachic, but when you say today, I want a halachic state, it has all kinds of, because they understand halach in a very different way. And that's our job to make people to understand halach is beautiful. Halach is a beautiful, beautiful, system. And yes, and we don't, and the rabbis, deal with the issues in halacha, and we make sure, you know, people aren't mamzerim. We do what we can. I mean, within limits, halacha can't. So, you know, Rav Yitzchok Yochanan, Yochanan Spector, who Yeshiva University named after Reitz, is the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary, because Rav Yitzchok Yochanan sounds a bit better than Isaac Elchanan, you know, Theological Seminary. And, he didn't go to any theological seminaries, but okay. Rav Yitzchok Elchanan died, I believe, in 1894, something like that. And YU was sort of established this part in 1896, like Chaim Berlin. You name yeshivas after somebody who recently died. So that's how Chaim Berlin got his name. It wasn't so recent when I guess Chaim Berlin started, but they named after great, the Or Sameach. I don't exactly know why Or Sameach, like Balchu, I don't know, but anyways, Or Sameach and Rav Yitzchok Elchanan. So he was very famous for solving agunot. And he invented, literally, he invented new halakhic concepts. And he basically did away with Gemara. It's like the Gemara says, Maim Shein Lehem Hemsof. If somebody goes missing, you think the opposite, right? Go like this. If somebody falls into water, if it's in a swimming pool, Maim Shein Sheyesh Lehem Sof, in other words, you can see the edge of the water, so then you can let his wife remarry. If you see him fall in, but if he falls into the Atlantic Ocean, you can't see the end. So you have to think maybe he got rescued and he's on an island somewhere. That doesn't sound too rational, right? So I'm not holding by there now, but yeah, different definitions of how we understand that idea. You think if somebody falls off a boat in the Atlantic Ocean, you can't let their wife remarry? That does, you know. But if you take the Gemara literally, but Rav Yitzchok Elchanan would bend over backwards. And, you know, and we know the great rabbinic tradition was, and you see it all over the place. You don't see it anymore today because they don't teach this stuff. I don't know. It's, what can I do? But that the rabbis would always try to say chicken. Some old woman would come to kosher. I was just reading a story. I think it's Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Pretty sure, but I might be wrong, but it doesn't matter. But it sounds like Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Somebody came with a shayla on a chicken. Maybe it's in the previous generation. I don't know. Years ago. And he asked them where they lived. And they told him where they lived. It said, it's kosher. So the person left. And so he said, what's happened with the chicken's kosher? So he said, well, they said where they lived. They lived in some neighborhood, poor neighborhood. And it's an hour away. So they had to schlep an hour. They walked for an hour from poor neighborhood. You have to be lenient when it comes to poor people. That's the classic halachot. Yeah, the halacha changes. If you're rich or you're poor, it's different. Yeah, the same way rich gives more tzedakah, hilchot kashrut changes. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. It's in the Ramah. So that's, you know, where you come from determines if the food is kosher. Now, if it's pork, he's not going to say it's kosher. I'll get to your question in 1 second. So Rav Yitzchok Elchanan went bent over backwards to be matir every aguna. I remember, I think, Dr. Lam saying, but there were three cases he couldn't solve. If you can solve 1,000% of the cases and you say matir, then that's a joke. Once in a blue moon, you have a tragedy and you can't solve a case. But 99.9% of the cases, if I remember correctly, he has over 250 tshuvas on agunas, and 247 of the 250, he solved it, and the three he couldn't solve. Yocheved, what do you want to say?
Okay, it's just a comment. I just want to point out that the Maharsham, Rav Shalom Mordechai Cohen Shwadron, was also known as a Mekel.
Everybody was a Mekel.
Right. And
there's no such thing as a Machmir Rabbi.
And he had his own unique way of dealing with agunas. Somehow he figured out a way to sometimes annul the original marriage, which I think was used. I think it could be Dr. Shapiro will get to this. It was definitely used in Israel Matra in the Langer case, but
yes.
Okay. Just people, somehow the Marsham is not that famous. So I want to put a,
it was famously used by Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in the following case. I don't want to spend too much on the details, but the bottom line is, if you send a get, the Gemara is a whole thing that if you send a get through a messenger and you cancel the get, what happened is you can send a divorce bill to your wife, and then people didn't travel. So they had some person, they traveled, go to the wife and take him 3 days till she got the get. And after day one, the husband had a change of heart. So he goes to the court and he says, I nullify my divorce. And that's fine. You're allowed to do such a thing before it arrives in his wife's hand. The problem is the wife doesn't know and there's no communication. So she's going to get this divorce and she's going to think she's divorced, but she's really married. So the Gemara, Rabban Gamliel made a law. Rabban Gamliel made a rule: you're not allowed to nullify the get unless it's in the presence of the wife, because otherwise she won't know. So what happens if you ignore what Rabban Gamliel did? Rabban Gamliel is a rabbi; he can't change the law of Torah. So let's say a man sends his wife to a get to his wife, and he cancels the get, and she doesn't know about it. So the Talmud says she's is divorced. What do you mean she's divorced? The Torah laws, he can cancel it. How can Rabban Gamliel say he can't cancel it? Afkina Rabbanan, the rabbis annulled the marriage. So Gemara says, Tina, the Kaddish Bekaspa, that makes sense if he gave her a ring when they got married. He can, the rabbis can, what's it called in English? The rabbis take away your property. The government takes away your property. There's some term for that. They want to build a highway. They can take away your house without your permission. Okay, so the rabbi said, what's your money? I'm sorry?
Confiscate.
No, but there's this, thank you, but there's a special term. I forget what it's
eminent
called.
Eminent domain.
Eminent domain. That's it. Thank you very much. So, they've been living together for 20 years. So too bad. So they lived together for 20 years without being married. All their intimate relations are married. So that's the word. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank did that once. So, but today that's a very easy solution. But apparently it wasn't published because of the politics, the tragic politics of the world. I was listening to an interview yesterday. I don't even want to mention with who. I don't know why, but I was just listening. I happened to be walking home and a podcast, and this rabbi who is sort of modern Haredi, you know, one of these people who sort of straddles the world, like he's sort of raised in the Haredi world, but he's much more modern and open, was saying that he has a Das Torah who's guiding him, and he's saying things against a lot of the Haredi positions, and he tries to tell people, but he can't reveal who his Das Torah is, because it would ruin that rabbi's life, because they would throw him out of the community. So it's a tragedy, but rabbis are afraid to go public, because the community will just, you know, their kids won't get a shidduch, and I don't have to tell you the terrorism that goes on in the world, and it's tragic. So apparently, Rachid, so this is, they did, but there are solutions, but it takes boldness. It takes boldness, and that's the way the halacha used to work. And as, listen, Jacob Katz will tell you, when the reform movement started, there became a fear to all this. Even Rav Soloveitchik, I think I mentioned before, when Rabbi Rakapeth went to Russia, and he asked the Rav, can he go on a cab on Shabbos to get to the shul? His hotel was 20 miles away. You know, the Russians aren't stupid. The KGB put them, you know, and this is in the 70s, the 80s, before the Iron, when we still had an Iron Curtain. So Rav Soloveitchik said, thought about it, said, I would love to allow it, but I can't, because of the conservative movement. You know, that they allow driving, and people won't know. You're driving Russia, people almost, so that's a terrible thing. I mean, the Rav was saying that, probably, I have to do it. I mean, he was admitting why he had to do it, but it's sad that he had to do it. But then, yeah, they're just afraid. So it's, but all rabbis used to be lenient, because people didn't want strict rabbis. And what makes you a rabbi? Rav Moshe Feinstein's famous story. People ask you questions. That's how you become a great rabbi. When people, the people decide, it's bottom up. Who are the gedolim? The people decide who we trust, who we like their answers. It's good. And that's how it's meant to be. And koch tetera adib, the strength of being lenient is greater. That's the Gemara in Beitza, famous Gemara that sort of gone out with the dodo bird. Because as Rashi says, any Tom, Dick, or Harry can say it's forbidden. It takes great Torah scholarship to say it's permissible. That's the job. I mentioned before, Rav Schechter would tell us, we have to assume everything is permitted. Everything is permitted unless you have a reason to say it's not. Today, it goes the opposite. Everything is forbidden unless you have a heter. No, everything is mutter unless you have a reason to say it's forbidden. That's how Jews have to live. And that's how we used to live. So we'll go back to there the one day when we have the Melech HaMashiach, we'll get back to there one day. Jewish history goes in curves. We're right now living in a time period of, you know, extremism, but it's part of, because the whole world is like that. It's not just Jews. It's Islam, and it's secular culture, and it's the, you know, the shift in political leadership all around the world to the extremism. It all goes together, and we're connected to all that. Okay, I'm talking too much politics today. Let's get back to our sitter. Okay, Et Samach David. So one other thing. Okay, so we're praying for the Mashiach separate. We can have Yerushalayim built up by secular apikorsim people. The movie theaters are open on Friday night. Baruch Hashem, Jews are walking the streets in Yerushalayim. No, they go to movie theaters, so invite them to your house for a Friday night meal. So maybe they won't go to the movie theaters. I don't even know if movie theaters are open in Yerushalayim, but it wouldn't bother me. That's, and it shouldn't, because that's, I don't want to force it down anybody's throat, and people can do, we live in, we, Judy, I believe this is the Torah way. We have to bring people benachat, divrei chachamim, benachat nishmim, with kindness. We can't force, in a society of today, where it's secular society, you can't force people to be religious, and it just turns them off. But even if it wouldn't turn them off, that's just an added reason. Okay, to have Yerushalayim, but we say, as a bit mehera, I kind of like that word. We had in Yerushalayim Bekarov, right? B'nei atah Bekarov v'yameinu, soon. And here we have mehera very, very, very quickly. Kili Yeshua ha-kivinu kol yom. We're waiting for your salvation every day. So this is, of course, that's what we say. Every day we await. Now, what does etzemach mean? What's etzemach? Nutzemach. The tzemach tzedek. The tzev, is that the third Lubavitcher Rebbe? I don't know which Lubavitcher Rebbe is the tzemach tzedek. I'm sorry?
Sprout of a plant that's about to come up.
Right. But the tzemach tzedek was one of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's. He's known as the tzemach tzedek, I believe, right? I think the third one. I don't know.
He was the Friedrich Rebbe's father.
Oh, the Friedrich Rebbe's father. So that would be the fifth one. Okay. Anyways, whatever. Right. So it's flowering. Let's hold on a second. Somebody picked that up, I hope. Okay. The flowering. So what does that mean? I think what it means is that God puts the seed for the Mashiach. November 29th, 1947. UN partition plan. The seeds are planted. Now we have to make those seeds grow. I'm sorry?
Chaf Tet B'November.
Yeah, I said November 29th. No, or did I say it wrong? Yeah.
Not, you said 30, it right.
33-3, right? I remember as a kid, they played that. Afghanistan, no. They went through the... Yeah, have you heard that tape? I haven't heard it in years and years. That tape from the United Nations vote. Okay, so God plants, but we have to nurture. We have to water the plant. At Semach David, we're not asking God to do it for us. We're asking God to plant at Semach David of the Chameirat Tzmiach. Let it grow quickly. But I think it's up to us. We're waiting for you. But I really think it's like everything in life in Judaism. It's a partnership between man and God. Now this idea of waiting for the redemption. I mean, so you say waiting? No, I'm interpreting we have to bring the redemption. In other words, God does the first step and we partner with God. I guess that was the whole debate. Do we have to wait for the redemption? That was the classical view that seems to have changed. But so this is the fourth question. That is asked in the here. I'll just do it very quickly. I guess we've quoted this Gemara before, but I don't know that I've ever really done it inside. It's a very important Gemara. Where are we here? Shabbos. Why don't I see it here? Here we go. 31a. Amar Rava. Rava is living in the fourth century. It's a later Amora. You know, Abaye and Rava, they're sort of the fourth generation of Amoraim, of a Talmudic, generation. When you have your final exam at 120, when they're going to give a judgment, Omrim Lo, this is the famous Gemara, but we're not going to go through it really. Now, Nasata v'natata b'emuna, were your business dealings, did your business dealings demonstrate that you have faith in God? That's what it means. It doesn't mean were your business dealings on honesty. I mean, it also means that, but it means did your business dealings say that you have faith in God? Because one who cheats in business doesn't believe in God, because the Gemara says God determines how successful your business, right? For every hard worker, bright person, there are 10 other businesses. You know, you're in the wrong business because of tariffs. So now your whole business is destroyed because other people are doing well. So does your business dealing reflect belief in God? Did you study Torah? Did you set aside time for Torah? Asakta. It's not enough to have kids. You have to be involved in raising families and supporting whatever orphanages. That's also a part of the mitzvah. Tzipi tel Yeshua. Did you, at Sofeh is a watchman, like sits there on guard. Tzipi tel Yeshua. And then Pilpelta b'chokma, did you engage in wisdom, study science, physics, chemistry? Chokma is always non-Torah, not direct Torah. It's related to Torah, of course. It's part of Torah. It's part of God's creation. But Chokmah is always the reference to non-classical Torah sources. And Heventa Tavar Mitoch Tavar, did you apply your knowledge? That's what I say. It's got to be practical, not just abstract. Did you understand one thing from something else and learn how to apply it? So these are the six questions the Talmud says are going to be asked. And question four is that we await, it's more than we await. In other words, Sofes sits there, he's looking, there's nothing there, nothing happening. But you gotta be always on the lookout that any sign, that may be a sign of the redemption. Let's grab it, let's do something. That's what it seems. Sipita is more than lechakot, like in the Rambam, Bapa Pishit Mameya Imkoze Achakalo, is passive waiting. Achakalo, I'm gonna wait for him. That's how the Rambam, the Rambam didn't make up the animamins, but whoever collated from the Rambam says Achakalo Tzipita is a much more active, taking an active role in the redemption of the people. Okay. All right. Baruch Hashem, Matzmiach, Keren Yeshua. Okay. God will, help grow the, salvation. Okay. So let's just introduce, probably doesn't even really pay, but we'll, to start Shema Koleinu, okay, I guess we can wait till next week, but just, I'll just say one thing, and then maybe we'll repeat it next week. Just as, we said when we went over the 13 middle brachot, right, of the Shmon Esrei, the way we have it, 13-3, of course, today we have 19 brachot. So I mentioned last week, at Tzemach David and the Yerushalayim, that's why people say, why didn't they change the name to the Chasrei? So the symbolizing, once you have a name, you don't change it so easily. But some say, that it was changed. There were 17 brachot. And when they added the Vilamal Shinim, it made 18 brachot. And it's only in Babel. It's only in Babel that these two brachot became separated. But when Rabbi Gamliel, living in the 3rd century, the generation after the destruction of the temple, and he's asked Shmuel HaKatan to compose the Moshinim, according to this, it seems to be the dominant understanding, there were only 17 blessings in the land of Israel, and the Moshinim made it 18 blessings. So we always assume that Shema Koleinu, I mentioned this many weeks ago, but that Shema Koleinu is sort of, we have 12 things we request. We request wisdom, wealth, health, return of the exiles, the Sanhedrin, all the things. The first six are our personal things, right? Wisdom, wealth, etc., health. And the last six, if we to Kabbashu, gather in the people, return the Sanhedrin, build Yerushalayim, the righteous. The last six are national. We have our personal requests and our national requests. And then Shema Koleinu is sort of a catch-all. Anything you want to add in, you forgot something. And they say, God, you should listen to all 12 of the brachot we've just asked you for. That's, I think, the way we were all taught, and that's the simple explanation. But we mentioned, and I saw it again quoted by in the Torah Chaim, commentary on the Siddur, that no, it's a continuation of the brachot. It's the, we started to kav shofar gadol. The Jewish people, we should hear the exiles come in, the kav shofar. Then hashiva shofteinu, then we should have a Sanhedrin. Let's establish a judicial system run according to the laws of the Torah. Bilamal Shinin, get rid of the wicked. Pray for the righteous. The six people we pray for, we discussed a few weeks. The Tzadikim, Chasidim, Zikne Amcha, Yisrael, etc. Then the rebuilding of Yerushalayim, the coming of the Mashiach. And now God will listen to our prayers. Because what is the Beit HaMikdash? The Beit HaMikdash is a Makom HaTfilah. Ki beiti beit tefilah yikarei l'chol hamim. That's the main purpose is not korbanot. The korbanot were a secondary purpose, especially if we take the view we're not going to have korbanot in the third temple. But even assuming we will have animal sacrifices in the third temple, the main function even in the second temple was not animal sacrifices, was the coming together of the Jewish people. That was our central meeting place. But also a key beiti, that central meeting place of the entire universe. I said many times, I say it all the time. Ki beiti beit veli karei l'chol ha'amim, all the nations, the Christians and the Hindus and the Buddha and the Chvais and the Mormons, they're all going to come to pray in Jerusalem. They're all going to recognize one God. They're going to have Mormonism and Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam and Christianity. Yeah, not going to go away. But we're not going to sit there asking who they're praying to. Maybe they're praying to their false gods. But as the Rambam says, those false gods help pave the way for the coming of the Mashiach. It's really powerful. But Ki Beit Tefilah, so Shema Koleinu, and we believe our tefillah exists. You know, the famous joke, right? The Menachem Begin joke. That's why I heard it from, right? The Joe joke. With, I don't know who was president in Begin's years, 77. 77, that was after Nixon Ford, I guess. Whatever, all the Carter, obviously.
Carter.
Yeah, of course, Carter. Yeah, of course. So I don't know, they're calling, you know, the Red Line Moscow. I don't know. So Begin puts in like a dime. That's what, you know, before we had cell phones, you remember you had to pay to make a phone call, public phones. It was a dime, then it was a quarter, right? We're all dating ourselves, but that's okay. So they said, what do you mean a dime? How do you call heaven? It says, oh, from here, it's a local call. I probably didn't tell it right, but that was Begin's line that, from Jerusalem to heaven's a local call. So that's Taka, deep understanding. He's right. That's the beauty. He baked Vila, the voices of the Jewish people are heard in Yerushalayim. So Shema Kolenu is not just the way we always understand it as a wrap-up, but of all the Tehira thing, it's the culmination. Now that we have Yerushalayim Mikdash, now our prayers can be heard better. Our prayers will be heard better. I think it's such a beautiful way of looking at the bracha, very differently than we were probably all trained. Okay, let's just do a quick review, and then I'll take any questions.
Well, they're coming.
Yeah, I was going to do the review first for 1 minute, and then I'll take questions. Okay, we said we went through the Rambam the same way. We shouldn't waste our time worrying about how the Mashiach is going to come. Don't waste our time worrying about the Beit HaMikdash. Yes, the Rambam says it will be built by the king, and the Mashiach will bring peace. That's the role. But how that's going to happen, we don't know. And false messianism, of course, is very dangerous. False Templism, whatever word you want to use, is also dangerous, even perhaps at one point, the state of Israel. Yeah, and it's in the 16th, the Rav Yosef Karo in Sfat, after Spanish, and the Ari and Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, none of them said we're going to have a state of Israel. They composed the Shulchan Aruch, and as Dr. Chorsky points out, the Shulchan Aruch was meant to be this constitution of the new Jews coming back to Israel, but they never created a Jewish state the 16th century. I don't know, we weren't ready for it. Now we are. Now we are. Things change. But anyway, so that's, and then we saw this amazing idea in the Rambam, so much so we don't understand how God works. God brought about Christianity. And the Rambam says Christianity is idolatry, right? The Rambam says you have to give up your life rather than convert to Christianity. Not all agree with the Rambam, but that's the Rambam's view. And nonetheless, the Rambam says Christianity is very good, or there's something very positive about it. It paved the way to the Mashiach. We've got people talking about messianism, that there will be a better future. It's a grade, it's 50 grades above paganism. So they have a trinity, but it kind of emanates from one God. And that's so much better than paganism. Muhammad, of course, is not even a problem at all, according to the Rambam, because Islam is one God. But that's, it's really powerful Rambam. And then we discussed at Tzemach David, right, that the division of the two brachot, because we can have Yerushalayim without at Tzemach David. It's not perfect, but we can have one bracha that hundreds of thousands of Jews live in Yerushalayim. We have another bracha, let's pray for it, it'll be better. But God just plants the seed, the Tzemach, and we have to make the seed grow. And we hope it happens, Mehera, but that's one of the things that God's going to test us on, so to speak, in the future, see, Peter, the issue that we await the redemption. Okay, Zev, what did you want to ask?
I wanted to ask, is there a variation in the Shema Tefillah bracha near the end where it says, Gata Shema, it's called
next week. We didn't talk about Shema. Yeah, we're going to talk about that next week. There is a variation. It's an important variation. Next week, please, God. Yeah. I just wanted, and we had a few minutes left, so I just introduced Shema Kolenu. Yeah, what Yocheved is saying, we discussed that last week, right? I think you had to leave early, but discuss that last week, that why you were separated, the Rav's idea about praying for the Mashiach. I mean, that's exactly it. Right. Thank you very much.
I saw that in the Rabbi Wolgamuth book.
Yes, that's, I quoted that last week. I know
okay,
you had to leave.
That's,
don't be sorry. I thank you. The third Lubavitch Rebbe. I was right. Rav Menachem Mendel of Lubavitch, 1789-1866. Right. There's a street in Yerushalayim. Yes, kept up in November. I know that. I don't know where it is exactly, but I do know there's a street there. Jews should not rebel against the nations. Right, that's the one. We shouldn't go up to Jerusalem like as a wall, like massive immigration, and we shouldn't rebel against the nation. Of course, the Mesha Chachma, who I mentioned, the Or Samech, he was one, the Gimushua, even if they did apply, which is very questionable, if it applied practically, like halachically, then the nations broke their half of the bargain, or the Mesha Chachma died in 1926. So he said the Balfour Declaration, that was his famous thing. The Balfour Declaration in 1979 was, we're not rebelling against the nations. The nations gave us the right to come back to Israel. But it does mean, and Rav Herzog was into this a lot, we have to follow international law. We are bound by, we don't like the United Nations. I'm not getting into the politics of it. But yes, if Israel is going to be a nation, we have to run by the rules of the nation. And therefore, that's one of the reasons, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think I am, but if somebody thinks I am, let me know. Rav Herzog said, God forbid we should destroy churches in the state of Israel. Avodah Zarah. So if you take the, how can we allow churches in Israel? We live in it. We're part of the international rules. We respect other religions. That's the way it works in the modern world. You know, too bad. So, and Rav Herzog is a great Gaon Olam. I have to look up the exact source. But, and that's, of course, you can have other things. It's not really Avodah Zarah, but we can't do it. They'll create a war. He was saying not that it's pikuach nefesh. He was saying no, fundamentally, in the modern world, in a normal state, we have freedom of religion and people can choose how they worship. And that, of course, applies to Jews, not just to non-Jews. But anyway, so these are things that people, we don't think about enough. We're not taught about enough. We just think, you know, we're going to take the Gemara and we're going to apply it to land Israel. And that's why that I'll just end with this. That's why the Doravi, the great grandson of the Chatham Sofer, Rav Moshe Shmuel Glasner, he's a fascinating character, dies in 1924, from Hungary, you know, the most anti-Zionist family in the country, and he, of course, was a big Zionist, but in his introduction, I didn't realize, I'm such an idiot, I didn't realize this until like a few weeks ago, until I was reading something about it, how stupid I am. I always say, and it's called the Dor Revii, because he's the eldest great-grandson of the Chatham Sofer. So he wants to connect. I'm the fourth generation. But it's also the Dor Revii Yeshuvuhena. The fourth generation will return to the land. I never chapped that extra reason why he called it that, because he went back down to Israel, and he said that one of the changes that we're going to have down to Israel, we're going to go back to the Tor Sheba'al Peh. This Torah Shebichtav is really bad. This, because the Torah Shebichtav is frozen. The written word is, it puts you in a straitjacket. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says this, I can't do anything. I'm stuck. That's not the way Torah was meant to be. Torah is meant that, it's the way he writes. One of the reasons Torah Shebichtav is so every generation can interpret it without worrying about the previous generation. I've told you already, Rav Moshe Fein, you don't have to worry about precedent. Rav Shakti's told that all the time. But it's very hard with have the written word. So he says, coming back to Israel, Torah's going to be in its natural state. Remember, we forget it was forbidden. It was forbidden to write down the oral law. They have no choice. Sometimes you see this always. Rav Yehuda Nasi, sometimes, so our no choice today, let's say, is to keep all the church in Israel, whatever it might be. There was no choice. Torah would be for us. It's a Torah prohibition right there. Too bad. Well, otherwise, Torah will be lost. So he said, now that we're coming back to Israel, we're going to go back to the original Torah, and therefore the halacha will be much more flexible. He's got a long beard, you know. So he's not like, you know, he comes from the Hungarian Orthodoxy, whatever. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. I mean, you know, a Gaon Olam. And, you know, but it's a matter of, and he said, we're going to go back to Hiroshima. I was just reading somewhere, actually, that a whole story, somebody, that's where I saw it, Abdorvi. I think it was in tradition, if I'm not mistaken. One of the Dor Revii's great-great-grandson, I don't know, by the eighth generation, was making a bar mitzvah, and he wanted to publish some of the writings of the Dor Revii or the bar mitzvah, and the Haredi cousins wouldn't let him do it, a whole thing he was writing about, because he's writing about Zionism. He says, well, everybody knows he was Zionist. He says, no. In the Haredi world, they don't know he was a Zionist. It's hard to believe they don't know he was a Zionist because if they would know he was a Zionist, they couldn't learn his works anymore. So they've actually kept it a secret that he was like a closet Zionist. That's like an astounding thing. And that's when he mentioned the Dor Revii, even named his book to relate to the return to land vision. Whatever, it's, we live in an insane world. What can I tell you?
But, Rabbi Kelman?
Yes.
What's the significance of Karen in the SMF?
The horn, it's me, Karen Yeshua. It doesn't just mean a horn. I mean, it sometimes does mean a horn. Right. But I don't know offhand. Vayaron Karen Le'amo means the status of the people. Matzmiach Karen Yeshua. Why don't we
maybe
just...
Maybe whenever a king was anointed, Shul took, it said Shul, and Navi took his Karen to
glory,
pour oil.
The Karen is the glory. The reason the Karen means sort of the greatness is because that's what a horn is, you know, the great thing of the animal. I mean, when it says Moshe can... But, what do you want to say?
Shul carried a Karen of oil to anoint the kings. It always uses the word Karen whenever.
Oh, is that what they use the word is Karen like as a kli?
You also have Karen in the first one.
The Karen that has oil. Or he would take his Karen.
No, Tarum Bishuacha. Right, right. We have that. I don't know exactly, but let me look into it. Right, but that's very interesting that Karen is a coin of a vessel that they used. And that's the vessel they use to anoint. That's interesting. Which is sort of like a horn. That would actually tie into its meaning as a horn, you know, because it's so it can pour in. I don't know. Okay.
Shaul and David, he took a Karen to anoint them.
Okay.
Rambam were you quoting?
Sorry, which Rambam was I quoting?
Yeah.
The 11th and 12th chapters of Hilchot Melachim. The final two chapters in the Rambam. In Sefer Hilchot Melachim, the Laws of Kings. It's in the last book of the Rambam. It's the last two things within the Rambam. So just take your Shoftim, the book, the 14th book, and go to the end. There are 12 chapters in the Laws of Kings and their war. Sometimes we refer to Hilchot Melachim, but often it's Hilchot Melachim Milchamotim, the Laws of Kings and their wars. So the last two chapters, this is how the Rambam ends. The Rambam, you know, presented Judaism in its complete focus, everything, even laws that don't apply. And of course, he's ending in the future. He's ending with the building of Mashiach, building the temple and the Mashiach. And that's how he ends. It's a really, like I say, he was a master organizer among everything else. Okay. Another question. All right. It's Sunday morning, Rabbi Liebtag, and all our shiurim next week. I think I got to all the questions. Okay. Thank you very much. Everybody have a good Shabbos. And those in Toronto, let's enjoy the snow. And if you have no choice, you might as well enjoy it. But I think it's beautiful. I love it. And we're going to get, by the end of this weekend, we'll have had over 60 centimeters in a week of snow. We had 26 centimeters last night. They said they're expecting another 20. Anyways. More importantly, we should hear good news from Israel. And it's real. I think now they agree. Three hostages come out on it. That's, I don't know. We have to dub in a lot. But I don't know that, whatever. I don't know what else we can do. That's not really. But maybe that's all we can do. But anyways. All right. Let's pray for good things. And everybody be well and enjoy. And Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
Okay. Shabbat Shalom.